Hey, sports fans, it's the Best Forking Sports Arena. Here we are, first week of August, lots of sports going on, player movement, all that kind of stuff. The title of the show tonight is Sentencing, Goodell Appeals, and the Real GOAT Passes Away. And I'm in here tonight with, of course, the one and only, the legend, Bill Deutsch.
Hey, Monty.
Hey. And over here with Dale Kulas, Mr. Expert Analyst.
It's gonna be a fascinating show today, I feel, Monty.
Well, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, and over here, he's not here right now, but Paul's in the studio, so I'm sure we're gonna hear his take on what's been going on in the last couple days. But
yeah, things are heating up a little bit.
Heating up all over the place. I mean, man, my Yankees have been taking a nosedive. We'll get into that, but I don't know. Let's Goodell appeals. I've been following the Deshaun Watson case like pretty close. Initially, he had 24 different masseuses claiming he forced them to engage in some sexual act or another. No actual intercourse or that kind of thing, but. The old massage parlor happy ending a la Mr. Kraft from the Patriots.
Oh, yeah, that was a big deal last year, yes.
Well, I don't know if he's gotten that far as Kraft did, but apparently there was either touching of some sort.
Yeah.
But I don't know how far.
Well, in Deshaun Watson's case, he's settled 23 of the 24 civil lawsuits against him.
It's 25.
25?
Yeah.
Well,
24.
24 of 25?
Well, it was 20 at first, right?
Yeah, and then he settled with like
another three or four.
Or one of them got dismissed is what I saw earlier, yeah. There wasn't like enough as corroborating evidence.
Yeah, so he... I have a tough time... with a masseuse in a private room not being able to control anything other than, you know, it's her hands.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were paid for whatever they did. And then on the other hand of it,
Badumcha.
The yeah.
Oh, you got to flick that right dial up. There you go.
Oh. There we go.
Wait a second.
but anyway, my thing is that these professional athletes, like many of them, are out in the town picking up girls and luring them back to their motel rooms without using professional personnel. And, you know, I had talked about a couple weeks ago where there was been some allegations that it wasn't just Deshaun Watson with the Houston Texans, but there were other players too. And that
would make sense.
Well, yeah, and so these professional massage artists were working with the team, and this kind of thing is going on, and I just the allegations are that somebody with a position of control is over them, and I'm like, well, that's not really true. I mean, this is not a professor or teacher or somebody that really controls your livelihood, a boss.
You know, yeah, was...
this is a professional athlete that you could easily say no and leave the room, I would think.
Yeah,
but if it's lucrative, I mean, if they're paying you 10 grand to come and give this guy a massage.
It was interesting. I guess we could probably get into the ruling of like how the suspension and all that, but we kind of actually jumped the gun a little bit, Monty. We forgot to kick things off with our opening sponsor here.
Oh,
so, yeah. We,
Dale?
Yeah. So I wonder what place has the coldest beer in town, Bill?
Well, I think it's Southtown Poorhouse, isn't it?
Yeah, where every day is a great day at the Southtown Poorhouse. You can stop in for your favorite drinks and, of course, happy hour with half-off apps and taps every day from 4 to 6 p.m. And you can't forget about Buck Burgers on Tuesdays and the awesome steak specials on Thursdays at 6, especially, you know, with all these crazy summer days. Get in the cool there at Southtown Poorhouse. Get some good food and beverages. So, and with school about a month out, the bands will be kicking in again, so make sure to check out the Southtown Poorhouse events page on their website to find out when your favorite band is playing live. So every day is a great day at the Southtown Poorhouse. They're located at 2015 Library Circle next to the Grand Cities Mall, open Tuesday through Saturday from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. And they're now hiring with great pay, flexible hours, part-time or full-time employee discounts, and free cover on band nights.
All right. Well, we got the ad in there, Dale. Thank you.
I just realized, I'm like, oh, shoot, we jumped the gun a little bit.
Well, you know, it's always hard to jump right into an ad as soon as we go on air. But we were talking about Deshaun Watson and Goodell Appeals, and that's kind of our middle issue of the day.
But did you catch how much games he got suspended for?
Well, he got suspended for 6, and I actually thought that was fair. Now, there's an uproar over that in the feminist arena, that it was only 6 games, and Goodell, apparently the players' union negotiated with him for this kind of a process, so they could go to an arbitrator, and that person could rule, and then Goodell gets to appoint somebody else to appeal to. This is what I understand is that the guy that Goodell is appealing to, he appointed to the position. It's a guy, his ex-New Jersey Attorney General Peter C. Harvey, appointed by NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell to hear the NFL's appeal of Deshaun Watson's 6-game suspension as handed down by a former federal judge. So the person that actually ruled and gave him a 6-game suspension was a former federal judge. And so that woman, it was a woman, she looked at the evidence and decided it was a 6-game appeal.
I read into it. It turned out like she stated why for the 6 games, that although Watson violated the personal conduct policy, there was not enough evidence to justify an indefinite suspension.
Right.
So,
So now Goodell is going back and wanting to do possibly somewhere between a 12-game suspension or a year suspension plus a big fine on top of it. And he didn't like the fact that she didn't fine him.
Yeah, you'd think, I know they said NFL's, and like say Goodell, like you kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, that they're going to appeal for what sounds like a year-long suspension.
But now the Players Association has also weighed in and said that they're going to file a response to his appeal. Mm-hmm. See, before the decision came down, they decided that they weren't going to appeal, the Players Association, but because Goodell didn't accept the ruling, now they're going to weigh in on it and see what happens. But I don't, you know, I just think that.
Well, I know that was the case of what happened with that leaked TMZ video of that the Ravens running back. I'm just blank. Jamal Lewis, right? Was that it that happened to him? Because eventually, when he had that domestic assault, just the news about it, wasn't it just like a 4-game suspension? But when that video leaked, all of a sudden, you know, he saw how, you know, devastating it actually was in reality, and you know, got a whole. I think it was a year. But then no team wanted to. He was like persona non grata in the league ever since, right?
Well, it ruined his career.
Yeah,
yeah. No. I don't know, Bill. What do you think of that?
Well, I don't know. There's just some different things that have come out too. That, you know, that guy that did some gambling.
Ridley from the Falcons, I think.
Yeah, he's gonna lose like $11 million or something in salary. And he bet $1,500.
In like a parlay or something. Yeah.
And was it like against his own team or something
No, I think it was just...
I think he was injured. He wasn't even playing.
Yeah, he wasn't. And it had nothing to do with him like being able to tank a game or anything like that. So I don't know. You know, I just think that the whole punishment scenario in the NFL is so skewed, and now because Goodell has got it so wrong so many times over the past decade or so, and that's been the issue, is that it's been so uneven that he's trying to make an example this time around for this guy, and I don't know. I mean, I I'm looking at just, well, he's going to get paid whether he plays or not.
Well, basically, it should be Goodell's decision, though, right?
Well, I suppose.
Because now, if you know, if he had this other girl do all this stuff, and then all of a sudden now he's putting up some fight that, you know, obviously.
I remember when I was reading the details earlier today, I think Goodell can issue a decision, but I think it's also, I want to say it's ultimately up to, like, wasn't like a jurisdiction board or kind of like a panel or something like that? I forget the exact details.
Well, I don't. Well, the NFL Players Association or something is involved in it.
Yeah.
And so they're kind of defending Watson, but.
So that player that got, was that this past week also a player getting fined for gambling was then? Or?
No, that's, well, that was last season.
Last season, oh, okay. Yeah. And so it's so hard.
But the other thing that's real interesting in this, too, is that Cleveland plays in Houston the seventh week. Did you realize that?
No, I didn't.
So the NFL. Oh,
so he could have played in that game seven.
Right? Oh.
And so basically they're saying, you know, that they do not want him playing in Houston.
Well,
as a member of Cleveland,
I noticed in the outrage portion of what I saw on Network Sports was that the lawyer that had represented most of these clients, but they've all settled out of court except one, and so that one and he were on stage today. And she was crying about how this would affect how little girls look at pro sports and pro athletes. And I don't know. I think at some point there's some responsibility for yourself, too. Nobody forces you to go into that room. Nobody. And these weren't like, you know, we have had more serious allegations. These were the basic happy ending type stories, you know, and I'm like,
well, so I just think he was basically showing off. I mean, they showed that, you know, he'd come in there and he didn't want to use the regular towel that they, or they the regular sheet that they had, because that was like a, you know, a double sheet or whatever. He came in there with, yeah, they, you know, showed a picture of him that, you know, basically like a golf towel. Huh. And he says, you know, that's all I need. Oh, so yeah, then, yeah, then that would fall off all the time, I'm sure. And
well, yeah,
and he was just, I'm sure, trying to show off whatever.
Well, I had read one of the accusers saying he took my hand and he placed it on his genitals. And I was like, well, you could, like, walk out of the room?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a tough time with the whole Deshaun Watson scenario because he didn't.
Well, maybe if they did certain things, they got more money.
Oh, I suppose. But
so I'm sure it wasn't just a one-time deal that, you know, I'm sure he was with a girl for like a month or something.
Well, that's what I mean. But then if you were so disgusted by it, why would you come back? I had criminal trials like that, where girls made accusations against guys that, you know, he did this on the first date, second date, third date, fourth time I went over to his place, this kind of thing, but you still went back over there,
right?
And I'm like, you know, you do have some ability to say no, and isn't that what we're all taught? Is no means no, right?
Yeah, that was. That's what they told us in schools, for me anyways.
Well,
yeah.
I know. That's what they say on Judge Judy, too. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. And okay, so I'll get off that issue. Sorry, women out there. Don't mean to sound like we're like anti-girls, but that particular case is a little odd. It just well, is.
Would you want him to be your quarterback on your team?
Boy, is he talented?
Well, I'm sure he's talented.
Well, apparently he's like as talented as probably the top five quarterbacks in the league, but because of this mess, he hasn't touched the field in over a year.
And possibly another year.
Yeah.
I guess there's another.
And really, you're probably happy if you get 10 years in the league and then all of a sudden you're losing two of them right there.
Well, all we know for sure, though, is Cleveland is paying him whether he plays or not this year.
As a downside guarantee.
Well, I think that there is some legal hang-ups and stuff there that they don't have to pay him
the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Well, you would hope so, but yeah. I don't know. It's a mess. It's a mess, and Goodell has put his foot in the horse shit again.
I guess he did it in another case. In another bit, did you hear about the other big fine and suspension in the NFL for team owner this past week?
Oh, yeah. The Miami Dolphins owner for tampering and for the
with Tom Brady, yeah.
Stephen Ross. Fined him $1.5 million for tampering with Tom Brady and Sean Payton.
It took some draft picks, too.
Yep, and they lost their first round 2023 first draft pick, and I think that year's third round draft pick, or the next year's third round draft pick. But yeah, two big draft choices taken away and $1.5 million. Yeah, that's definitely a big blow.
Well, I don't know. Do we have to get into Brittany Griner then? I said sentencing let us off. Yeah. So all you people out there have seen, she got sentenced to 9 years, possible 10-year prison sentence, and she got sentenced to 9.
She's already served like 4 or 5, hasn't she?
Well, 6 months.
6 already.
Yeah. So
that's like 9.5 months.
Yeah, yeah. And here comes Paul. He knows. But I'm like... Like I was talking before the show started, our president and our administration have constantly stepped out in front of the media, and they have said that she's been being held unjustly. And I'm like, I disagree. I really do. I know the law, and if I'm going to Russia, I ain't bringing anything illegal with me. If I'm going to China, I'm not bringing anything illegal with me.
Why do you think I'm sitting here?
Well, you've got a grin on your face, Paul, for some reason.
Because I think this is hilarious. Because this girl kneeled for the flag, stomped on the American flag, talked about how America is so bad, and now she's sitting in a can in Russia for 9 years. Ha!
Well, that's part of the ideal is that, you know, United States of America is far from a perfect country, but we do have rights, and we do have due process, and constitutional rights. And that's why I'm wearing the flag tonight, because I will never kneel or disrespect the national anthem. I have relatives that fought in the wars, yeah. And my dad's brother fought in Vietnam. They blew him off the top of a tank.
Well, it's also funny too, because she's like, "Oh, I had a medicinal marijuana thing, you know, from
a card.
Because it's legal in America,
in Arizona.
Oh, but it's not in Russia. Oh, yeah. Snap! I guess you should have reevaluated, you know, taking a dump on the American flag, then, you dumb biatch.
Did we hit the details on like her official sentencing then? Like it was like 9 years.
9 years.
And like the prosecutors were going for, I guess she could have got up to 9.5.
Yeah, well, you know, because 10 was the max.
And I guess, yeah, like you said, she already did a half a year pretty much, yeah.
But the thing about Russia is you're dealing with a country that has basically zero tolerance for drug smuggling, drug laws, mm-hmm. drug violations. Obviously, she played for the... Phoenix Mercury and Arizona is a wide open state.
Like, yeah, I heard that the WNBA is going to lose hundreds of dollars now that she's not there.
Well, they also said the reason.
I just find this so comical. Yeah,
5 people didn't go to the game.
The reason that they wanted to give her almost the maximum sentence that they possibly could is because then it's going to look better if they end up trading her for, you know, this arms dealer or something that they're talking about.
And don't get me wrong, I do feel bad for her. I mean, I wouldn't wish on anybody to have to spend 9 years in a prison in another country. A gulag. You know, I mean, so that I do sympathize with that. I just think it's really comical, the fact that she is. Before that happened, she was over here just bashing the U.S.
It's the portion of a gram, and it's about the size of a pen top. Is that how much
it's actually a vape pen. with hashish oil in it. So
okay, so just like the top inch or something.
I actually think there was probably more than one. And the thing is that if she was going over there for a period of months, she probably had multiple ones. And the thing with the pens, I don't know if you've seen them, but I was out on the road last summer in multiple states: Colorado, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, Las Vegas, Nevada, Arizona, California, where it's wide open. So recreational use of that is wide open.
Yeah, but
yet we live in a state where it's still illegal. Mm-hmm. And recently Minnesota just passed, unbeknownst to a lot of lawmakers, that cannabis gummies and infused drinks, you can cross the border into East Grand Forks or into Moorhead from Fargo and purchase those. And our law enforcement in North Dakota warned everybody, you're either looking at an infraction, a misdemeanor, or a felony, depending on the amount you try to bring back in, and we catch you with it.
Yep.
And so we're just talking United States of America.
Yeah, but the amount that she had, I don't think that, it was obviously for personal use. It's not like she was smuggling drugs into Russia.
And that's the charges against her, though, was possession and smuggling.
Yeah, but the smuggling part, I mean,
we know that. We know that, yeah, that it was a small amount because, okay.
Going back to what you said, though, I mean, I know a lot of people that have actually gone to Colorado and loaded up their cars tried to bring it back into North Dakota, and then they got,
pulled
busted
over for speeding or whatever.
But you're talking about a car full of drugs. I mean, she had a couple of pens in her briefcase. I mean,
big, pretty much obvious personal use, distributing.
You'll never get me to, I'll not debate that because I'm sure everything she had was personal use. She wasn't going over to sell anything or to bring anything into Russia.
I just find it comical because she shat on the American flag, and now she's begging for it back.
The only thing that would be funnier is if it was Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, God, that would be great.
That would be an interesting headline.
Mr. Correctness over here.
Yeah, and why didn't Taiwan shoot down Pelosi? Good God.
Oh, my.
God, I was really rooting for that one.
But anyway, no, I fully expect that at some point down the road, and they said that this had to all play out the way it did. And so the merchant of death, the arms dealer that had targeted Americans all over the world, is going to be released back to them, and we're going to get Brittany Griner and this Whalen, this guy that was charged with being a espionage spy or something to that effect.
So do you think, what did you say, from 1 to 100% the chance of that happening within like the next year?
Well, I think if it's going to happen, it'll happen much quicker than a year. But I also, Dale, we had a little discussion online about that, and it's funny to me that Biden and the Biden administration sanctioned Putin's girlfriend this week. So they held up her assets and have locked them down. And I'm like, well, you think that's happening? That's helping Brittany Griner's situation?
Yeah, right.
So,
well, maybe they're going to
friends from America. Or?
No, she's a Russian, but she has assets over here or something that we have. Our administration has access to. So they've sanctioned her now, and I'm like, well, you're going to do that the week before the Brittany Griner sentencing? Really? That's going to
because then they're going to say release her, and we'll release those sanctions.
Yeah. And those sanctions might be bigger than the terrorist. This is not sports related, guys, but terrorists. Okay, I don't know if you guys have followed who Salomon al-Zawahiri was, but we took him out this week in Kabul, Afghanistan.
I heard that too.
Yeah, in the middle of the city.
Yeah, but. He was
a drone got him, and he was on his patio
on a deck of one of the
and his wife and stuff was right inside the.
Well, did you see Ducey grill the press secretary on that?
No,
he's saying like, what did you? He was in the middle of the city. What did you think was going to happen when we just handed the country over to them.
Well, and that's the thing is that the Taliban, one of the top Taliban leaders, that was his house. Those guys that we handed the country back to. And this Al-Zawahiri, I've followed him for like the last, well, since 9/11. He was like second in command to Osama bin Laden. And at one point, Egypt had him in custody and released him. If it held him, because he was like a
great soccer player.
You got trading cards of his too, or
he was a sports show.
Yeah. But the only thing I wanted to talk about really in relation to that was the type of bomb they took him out with. You know, it was the same one that they took the Iraqi Iranian general out on the highway from the airport in Iraq. I mean. Do you remember back to when we took that guy out?
Was it the Moab?
Well, his name was Solomon.
No, Solomon. The bomb, the Moab.
No, it was not the mother of all bombs. It was actually what they call this type of bomb. It's not really even a
little
bomb.
Drone, wasn't it?
It was a drone, but it was they liken it to like a Swiss Army knife. This bomb does not blow up like the city block. Or even the house, it comes in just and it opens. Patio. It opens up with these blades, and these blades are spinning around. And this guy got chopped to shreds, and nobody else around. Well, there was a couple guys there on the patio with him that got taken.
Sounds like the Green Goblin.
But that's what
they. It sounds like it's something out of a comic book movie. Yeah.
It was the same type of bomb they took out the Iranian general when he was in Iraq. The airport, and he got in his car and was on the road, and they took him out on the road. Anyway, this does not cause like collateral damage where you're taking out civilians besides when you're taking out the bad guy. So this guy met a fate that so deserving, really.
That's legal for us just to go over and kill some guy?
I think
the masterminds and dropping down our towers in New York.
I think if it's like an international most wanted kind of situation.
Well, he was. I mean,
how do you even get on that list? Seriously, like somebody's just sitting there, you know, playing Atari when they're 13, and then the next, couple of years, they're like, I'm just going to be, wanted by the entire world for.
Well, I had to drag it off in that direction because I followed the pursuit of that guy for a long time, and when they took him out, I was like, "Good riddance." He's one of those guys. He's like a prophet to all those terrorists out there.
And supposedly, we didn't have anybody on the ground in that entire country or something, too.
Yeah, no, we had no military personnel.
Yeah,
on the ground.
There. I don't know. I'm still. Thinking it's all probably BS. He's probably sitting on an island with Epstein right now and sucking down some cocktails.
This could veer so far off course.
I was going to say, Monty, I don't know how we're going to pivot this back to sports.
I have to address, well, because I'm a political guy and I read all the time. I mean, my thing is that at least I'm informed as best I can be with our media. You talked about Epstein. Now there's some suggestion coming out that he was like a double agent, either for the CIA or the Mossad out of Israel. And if that was the case, that would make sense that no wonder nobody chased him down when he was doing all this other stuff. So I don't know. We may learn more in the coming years.
Gosh, I can think of a horrible transition to use. I don't want to use it.
You're on it. Do it.
So, speaking of deaths, I'm sorry.
The goat.
I gotta find a way to get us off this. Monitor.
All right, we're back to sports. Okay, so Bill Russell, 88-year-old Bill Russell.
Well done, Dale.
Passed away, so I don't know, Dale. What do you know about Bill Russell?
No, I mean, obviously, you know, he was before my time, but I've always read and seen highlights of him. Known he's literally, like you said, the GOAT. He's the most winningest basketball, or well, besides basketball player of all time, of all the four major sports, the most championships of all time, 11 NBA titles. Two of them as a player coach, which is a big deal. Player coaches stopped being a thing in the NBA, I think, in around 1980. And that, too, broke a huge barrier, being the first African-American to coach a big four North American major league sport.
Absolutely.
So yeah. That broke a huge barrier that way, you know, paved the way for many others to follow. And, yeah, like I said, 11 NBA titles. I know he was very bitter with how the Boston Celtics treated his home, suffered a lot of discrimination, his house being...
There's a story
a lot of
about
stuff about
it,
that
being broken into and people defecating on his bed and that kind of thing. Even as he was winning championships for that city, Boston has had that racial issue for decades,
and they still do.
Well, I'm sure they do.
I know he was. It was good to hear though. I was kind of doing some more. I was kind of just like looking up interviews from like ESPN and other sports outlets over the years, just to see player testimonials about him this last few days. Oh. And I know he was very bitter with Boston, but it was good to see he kind of made peace with Boston, and like a lot of family and friends and colleagues urged him to come back for when they dedicated a statue to him about a decade ago. And they're pretty much like, we're going to dedicate the statue with or without you, but we really want you here. And it sounds like he kind of made peace with Boston there. So that was really, really good to see.
Well, what... So Bill, what do you remember about?
Well, I
Mr.
guess
Russell?
I just remember him being a very good player and always at Boston Garden.
Yeah, well,
I think he played all his games in Boston, didn't he? Or?
Yeah, well, yeah. He played 13 seasons for the Celtics and won 11 titles. The last two as the player coach.
But he was kind of an undersized center, wasn't he?
Very. They list him at about 6'9 or so. And he was more like a Draymond Green of the current age, where he was an undersized guy playing the big dudes. But he also put up big numbers, not scoring-wise, but rebound-wise, block shot-wise. They didn't even keep stats on block shots in those days. But his main rival was Wilt Chamberlain.
Oh, yeah.
And Wilt was younger than him.
I do remember reading some history of basketball books, how they really expounded on that rivalry between the two.
Well, and they were actually friends, and then they got to a point where they weren't friends because of all of the Wilt was the villain, Russell was the hero. And but the players he played with over that period of time, Bob Cousy is recognized as one of the very first really great point guards. The guy could dribble all over the place. Nobody could stop him. And, of course, John Havlicek was the big sixth man. If you remember the one playoff, it'll live in infamy. You see it all the time about Havlicek stole the ball. Havlicek stole the ball where I think it was like 66 or 68, one of those 2 years where Philadelphia had them on the ropes Havlicek stole the ball. All he really did was tip it. He didn't really steal it. But anyway, Tom Heinsohn, Don Nelson, Tom Satch Sanders, Casey Jones, Sam Jones was another guy that just passed away. But those guys all played on multiple, well, the Celtics won like seven championships in a row or something like that. Oh, we got, here he is. So, Supersonic
Hello.
Steve.
I am here and ready to go.
So we're in the middle of a discussion about Bill Russell, and I was talking about all of his
attributes
with the Boston Celtics and all the teammates he had. And so when you were a kid, he was a Seattle Supersonics coach.
Yes, he was.
So
yeah, he came in probably in the, 70s?
1973 to 77.
Yeah, there you go, yeah.
And the Seattle Supersonics made the playoffs for the first time in their history in 1975.
Yep, that's right.
So, as a young kid, what do you recall about those teams?
Well, It's funny. I remember sitting on the school bus after basketball practice, listening to Bob Blackburn, the announcer who had been there forever and ever, doing the games. And Bill Rutt, that was big, you know, and Spencer Haywood.
Spencer Haywood.
I don't remember if you remember that name, but Spencer Haywood.
68
and that
Olympics.
Was a big deal. Yes, because he went right there and then came over to the Sonics with, I think he might have spent 1 year at the University of Detroit.
He did, 1 year, and then he was in the ABA because the NBA wouldn't allow him in.
And Sam Shulman went out and got him.
Yeah, Sam Shulman. Yeah, there you go.
Well, he was the owner of the Sonics.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Al Bianchi might, So, yeah, that was back in the early days.
Well, what I remember is when I was a kid, do you remember that Northwestern Bell commercial with Bill Russell?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, with the car?
Well, no. He's sitting at a desk, and he's talking about the telephone company, and then he throws the basketball up over his shoulder, and there's a hoop on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I remember that.
And he had that cackling laugh.
Oh, fuck, yeah. He was amazing. And, you know, he was the perfect, because he landed here. I think he ended up living up in this neck of the woods he retired.
Yeah. He lived the last 30 years of his life at Mercer Island.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
So
I remember that.
What is Mercer Island?
What is it? Oh, it's kind of where it's the exclusive area of Seattle.
Oh.
The cat's meow, so to speak.
So that those 4 years he was in Seattle as the head coach, he fell in love with the area, and that made that his home.
Yes, he did.
When did he coach there?
I think he
73 to 77.
Mm. He wasn't playing then.
No, he was done playing.
No, he was done. Yeah.
But
he was
go ahead.
great influence in this area, obviously through all the country. But up here, he was special. He was a very special guy.
Well, because the Sonics couldn't have been in, what did they come into inception in like 69 or something like that?
I think it was 68. But 68? Somewhere in there.
And so he was like the big name they brought in after his tenure in Boston was over. But we were just talking about, you know, 11 championships in Boston.
That's ridiculous. I mean, we brought up a couple of months ago, the closest we got to that in like the modern era of the NBA from like last few decades was Robert Horry with 7. And like, yeah.
So as far as a player.
Yeah, as a player.
Yeah. And so 11 championships, but then... The other thing is he won 2 NCAA championships in college.
San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco. One of them was an undefeated team. So that was the last undefeated NCAA team before the 1976 Bobby Knight Indiana Hoosiers. Yeah. And hasn't been
won
since. Was
that 76 or 75?
76. 75 was John. 75 was UCLA and John Wooden's farewell.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I got a question to pose for you guys. Like, you know, was a couple years ago, you know, when they did the Last Dance, Michael Jordan documentary. And, you know, at that point, Michael Jordan was retired and distanced himself enough from the main league that pretty much a new generation kind of neglected him, and we're already kind of constantly like referring to, you know, LeBron as the greatest player of all time. And then but that Last Dance documentary just kind of was like a nice refresher reminder to kind of help influence the younger crowd to expose, you know, the greatness of Michael Jordan and be like, no, he's the best player. Do you think if they're to do like a Last Dance type of like 10-part documentary on Bill Russell that, no, this is really the greatest of all. Bill Russell's really the greatest of all time.
Bill Russell was an undersized center that put up astronomical numbers just like Wilt did. He didn't score as much, but defensively and as a guy that was the glue to a team,
I would
take Bill Russell in any era. I don't care.
I didn't have a chance to watch him, obviously, but other than some highlights and stuff from over the years and just reading up on him, but from what I was reading this past week, I don't know if you would agree with this, obviously you being way older, the basketball experts too, but it sounded like he was responsible for kind of transitioning the NBA from that first decade of the old Mikan style basketball and to help evolve the game a bit.
Yeah, well, I agree.
Would you say
that'd
be accurate?
Because the last great white basketball hero before it moved into the 60s was Bob Pettit of the Atlanta Hawks. And that guy could shoot the ball like just about any, I don't know if there's anybody any better now, because he was one of those guys that could shoot from just about anywhere. And there was no three-point line, so you can't count that in. But when Bill Russell got to the Celtics and he got teamed with Bob Cousy, Mr. Point Guard, who could distribute the ball like no other at that point in time. And I just hate when people try to compare eras. I don't know. What do you think, Steve?
Well, I don't think there's any comparison. Gary Payton came out about 2-3, maybe a month ago, and said the game's different now than when he played.
Well, okay. So when you and I were young guys, you could put two hands on a guy as a defender,
right?
And then they moved the rule to one hand. You know,
all right. There's always constant rule changes,
and then it was just a forearm. And now it's like you can't touch anybody. I don't know.
Well, you know, who brought that up, though, yeah?
LeBron. Yeah, I know.
Crybaby LeBron.
Yeah, I guess, maybe we could touch on the other big passing in the sports world from this past week. But
we're going to get to Mr. Scully, too. But I have a few points I wanted to make about Bill Russell. He's the only guy I know of that won championships as a player coach. Over the years, yep. There's been lots of player coaches in multiple sports. Lenny Wilkins was a player coach for three years for the Seattle Supersonics.
Yes, he did.
And then, but they didn't win in those years. I mean, they were there. They were playing well and doing what, because he was a great He is a great basketball mind too, but. Also, he's the guy that led him to the championship in 79, right?
Yep.
And I know that had to be a great period of time for you.
Oh, man. 78, 79. Lost in 78 to the Bullets. Beat them in 79. Yeah, that was nice. Yeah.
Seven-game series in 78 and a five-game series in 79.
And I'll tell you the reason why we won it was a guy named Paul Silas.
Well, Paul Silas, and you're going back to the Celtics, and you know, that's where he won a couple titles with them, and I told you the guy was a guy that you didn't want to play cards with because he was slick, and he'll never be.
Didn't he coach somewhere after when he retired?
I think he ended up with the Clippers, being a coach for the Clippers, really.
Okay, yeah. I think you're right.
In San Diego, and they were like a cursed franchise from day one.
JV team, yeah.
But as far as past player coaches, and I looked it up before I came in, and I talked because I knew about, you know, the last player coach in the NBA was Dave Cowens.
Yep, but the Celtics.
Yep, Bill, do you remember Dave Cowens?
Oh, I remember Dave Cowens.
Big Red,
yep, redhead.
Yeah. Well, he was the center.
6'9".
Yeah, 6'8 to 6'9". I think they maybe extended his height a little bit. But he was a Mr. Hustle, you know.
Oh, tough kid.
And left-handed, too, if I'm not mistaken. But he
was.
He was the last player coach in the NBA, and that was a 78-79 season. But he was the championship center on the 74 and the 76 Celtics. To me, he was like John Havlicek as a center. A guy just ran and ran and ran and ran. And, you know, well, geez.
Point center.
Yeah, a point center, a guy that could pass, a guy that could rebound. He was always in the top 10 in rebounding. And,
run the offense through the center.
And he was also, you know, that whole, well, gosh, Don Chaney, JoJo White, Don Nelson, Paul Silas, you know, those teams were just spectacular. And then another player coach, Dave DeBuscher.
With the Knicks?
Well, no, before the Knicks, he was 24 years old, and from 1964 to 67, he was Detroit Pistons head coach and player,
really?
Player coach.
I did not know that.
Before he came to the Knicks. And that's why he was such a great player when the Knicks got him, you know, because he was out basically like a coach on the floor.
Super Steve, what are you eating?
I just broke some ice, and I was going to put some ice in my glass of wine while you were talking.
Okay.
Well, I know, because
my wife.
Go ahead. No, you got it.
I like ice in my wine, and people think I'm crazy.
I do.
Canadians like ice in their beer.
I do too. I do with a little Tabasco sauce or something else. But no, we were scraping the ice bucket out, and half of it fell on the ground, and I was going, "Oh shit! I hope they don't hear that."
Oh, eagle ears here.
It adds to the ambiance.
No, we love that. But I think it's appropriate that we got you on the air tonight because we're talking about Bill Russell. And the thing is that I was like, I had always assumed that his years in Seattle weren't all that good. But when he led them to their first playoff appearance in 1975.
No. He came in and kind of turned the program around because we were, you know, bottom sellers.
Yeah,
and then he came in and kind of put a name on it, and and we did okay. You know, we were, you know, we made the playoffs first time ever. So that was a big deal.
Sikma then?
No, he came later.
No. He was. We had like Tom Mascheri,
Dick Snyder.
Shooting guard, good ball player. Tom Mascheri, Bob Rule.
I remember Bob Rule.
Colorado State guy. We had might have had Lee Winfield, Lucius Allen.
Slick Watts.
No, I think that was after Slick.
Really? So 76 was his first year there?
You know, Slick might have played with Bill Russell. And I think that's why he made the team, because of his hustle.
Who was the guy that had all the kids?
What is that, Bill?
Oh, Sean Kemp.
Yes, I remember hearing that.
I remember Sean Kemp.
Hang on there, Supersonic. I got to do this. Right. I got to do this ad.
Okay.
Dale's poking me to the side.
Just a little friendly poke.
Everett's Old School Cycle. Attention Harley Davidson owners. There is a place to get your Harley Davidson worked on. Everett's Old School Cycle. Everett's is the only PhD certified Harley Davidson technician in the area, and your one-stop shop for welding and machining, tires, oil changes, adjustments, and tuning and service. Everett's is also a drag specialty and biker's choice dealer, along with the Midwest V-Twin Manufacturing, Dynojet, Jim's dealer, Tab Exhaust, AMS Oil, and Lucas Oil dealer too. Everett's can get all the parts you need directly from Harley-Davidson. Oh, and by the way, they'll pick up your bike too. Treat your Harley-Davidson motorcycle the way it should be treated by going to Everett's Old School Cycle. Call him up, 701-772-3232.
Is that Paul's up there?
772-3232. What'd you say?
Is that Paul's motorcycle there?
I don't know.
In the background, Paul, is that your ride?
No, mine's way down.
Well, Paul got a Harley Davidson.
Of course.
Are you a bike rider? Well, that's what's wrong with you.
What?
God dang!
We got to put a shout out to Keith or Smalls and have to keep us abreast of the Raider score.
Oh yeah, I could give a quick check here.
Keith is coming in here to be with us on air next week.
Oh, I see Keith is in the chat there too. What's up, Keith? Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking to him next week.
We're going to get him in here, but I haven't got through all of my so Dave Cowens, Dave DeBuscher, Lenny Wilkins as player coaches. In the history of sports, as far as I know, the only player coach that's ever won an NBA championship or a Major League championship or an NFL championship, Bill Russell, in those 2 years. And I know after the Warriors won – this last NBA championship, my son was talking to me about Steve Kerr. And he was like, well, Steve Kerr has won 4 championships as the head coach, and he won 5 as a player, or I think that's correct. And he was like, so he's just like Bill Russell. And then I sat him down and I said, no, Bill Russell was a player coach.
Both duties combined, double the workload.
And so those last 2 seasons, he was the player coach. And then you should have seen his eyes light up like, oh, that's a whole different thing. Mm-hmm. That's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
So any other sports you know of that have player managers?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I do.
Because you're coming up with that or what?
Well, the NFL had them.
Didn't baseball do it too?
I don't remember that. I remember hockey.
Well, I didn't have any hockey notes. I looked at the NFL a little bit. Steve, you can help me out here? These guys are
Pete
great.
Pete Rose. Yes, I think Pete Rose.
There you go. Because I got baseball. Pete Rose.
Of course, that may have been to his own detriment. We found out.
No, you didn't ask me. You didn't ask me that. I just said, "Hey, Pete Rose, coach.
You're not helping me here, Steve."
I know. I had to help you out there a little bit.
Really quickly, I was just gonna. You asked if I had a bike. I'm gonna pull up a picture, and if anybody wants, it's up for sale for $22,000.
Hey, there we go.
You're a motorcycle guy.
He is, apparently.
There it is on screen for people watching the video version.
Oh. What is it? What do you got?
What is that?
Paul, give it the hard sell. What year is this guy?
Get over here and tell us what it is.
Hard sell.
That's a 2014 Street Glide Special with burst exhaust, freedom pipes, a seat I can't remember the name of, and a lot of other cool shit.
And it would look good.
What are you asking? $20,000? $20,000 for it?
$22,000.
So I just bought a seat. I just bought a CVL. You ever heard of them?
Oh yeah.
Okay. I just bought one. My wife don't want to ride on it though, so I got to ride by myself.
Well, you should be headed to Sturgis right now.
Oh yeah, it is Sturgis time. Yeah.
Yeah,
it is. My cousin is at Sturgis right now. I've been through it, but I've never been there for a ride.
So
that's
Paul,
on my bucket list.
Has Paul been to Sturgis?
No, my wife won't let me.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's a good, wholesome event. I don't know what you're talking about.
So, Steve, you know why Paul's got to sell his motorcycle? He's got little kids.
Anyone watching or viewing this, Paul, where would people get a hold of you?
Local at gfbestsource.com. Or go to our gfbestsource.com contacts page.
And okay, so we were talking
I take Venmo, PayPal.
Woo, all the cash.
cash is preferred.
Bitcoin?
Cash is king. Cash is king.
Always. So player managers in Major League Baseball. Pete Rose, obviously. You threw him out there. Others include
I think I have one more.
Well, there's more than that.
But I have one in my mind.
Well, throw it out here then.
Don Mattingly.
Was he a player coach?
Wasn't he for the Yankees?
He was an assistant coach, I think.
Okay. Well, that was my throw that out there.
Well, yeah, that's a good. But Cap Anson, Lou Boudreau, Fred Clark, Ty Cobb, Mickey Cochran, Joe Cronin, Connie Mack. I know you know these names. John McGraw, we're talking way back there in the day. Frank Robinson, Tris Speaker, and Joe Torre.
Joe Torre?
All.
Really?
All but Rose are in the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's what I looked at that list and I thought, Pete Rose did everything there was to do in baseball. And
Wasn't he on the field this week too or something?
No, what?
Or is it still coming up?
I think it's still coming up, the celebration.
With the Phillies?
The Phillies from 1980. And, no, I'm a, well, shit, I'm an old guy, and I'm like, Pete Rose, I don't give a shit. He's Hall of Fame. He's the all-time hits leader. He's the all-time National League consecutive games hitter. You know, there's Joe DiMaggio and there's Pete Rose. He won.
Enough said. Yeah. Enough said right there.
Yeah.
And
on top of that, he won World Series with more than two teams.
Yeah. I didn't know he played for the Expos.
Yeah, that was at the end. That was at the end.
Oh, was it? Okay. I didn't realize that.
So we were talking about Brittany Griner. Do you want to weigh in on her?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Go ahead.
I think she got what she deserved. And I know a lot of people are going to rank on me for that, but you know what? Her mouth got her in trouble, and I don't think a lot of Americans anymore are going to really give it a rat's ass.
And I think that's very true, Steve, because I've been following social media, and for as many people that stick up for her, there's about 9 that are just blasting her. Like, you didn't stand for our national anthem. You hate our flag. You did all this, and now you're stuck over there, and you violated the laws of Russia, and you deserve to be there. And yeah, it's harsh, but I brought up a point, and I don't know, you know, if any of you remember this, but I followed this story. I went to law school, and you know, I followed lots of legal issues. But in 1986, there were two Westerners that tried to smuggle heroin out of Malaysia. You have any idea what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I'm listening. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a guy named Kevin John Barlow. He had Australian and British citizenship. And a guy named Brian Jeffrey Shergill Chambers from Perth, Western Australia. And they were in Malaysia, the two of them, and they were transporting 141 grams of heroin. Okay, so 141 grams of heroin. They were sentenced to execution. And they were hung. I remember watching their trials.
Ooh.
And these two guys were sitting in trial when they were sentenced to death, and I watched their reactions at that point when no government was coming to rescue them. So when a gal like Brittany Griner gets busted for something like this and a 9-year sentence, I'm not really overly concerned, you know, as bad as I feel about it, because you're breaking the laws of another country, period.
And well, it wasn't as if she didn't know.
No, and that's the point. We brought that up, that initially she pled guilty and claimed that it was an accident, that she put it in her suitcase, and then like a day or two later, she came in claiming she had a prescription from a doctor for medicinal marijuana. And I'm like, so what? It doesn't matter in Russia.
Yeah, why couldn't they been like everybody else and just lost their luggage?
Bill, have you had your luggage lost?
No, they keep saying all that stuff that you see all the stuff. All right, that everybody's losing their luggage.
I'm gonna bend this back to sports. I know we've been political all over the place, and R.I.P. to Bill Russell, the greatest, the real GOAT. What do you think, Steve?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Peter, Ben Scully.
So I saw something about bowl games being played at the beginning of the season.
I saw that too, but I...
What?
I didn't...
Oh, no.
What the hell is that?
Is it just to get like a special branding in, I guess? Just to get squeeze a few of them in at the beginning of the season? So like the bottom of the list bowl games that don't really get that much attention?
Yeah, so like all of that... Coverage I did on all the bowl games.
Yes.
Last winter.
Unparalleled coverage.
Wall to wall.
Yeah.
Landmark episode of BFSA.
Steve, you don't know, but I covered the bowl games in depth.
Every
last one of them, week to week. And these guys were snoozing on me and raising hell with me. And I keep telling them, we're going to do a best of the bowl games.
How'd you do? How'd you do prediction wise?
Or did you predict anything?
Well, no, but it was well.
You just put the stats out there.
It was Georgia and Alabama from way back there. You know, there was no predicting.
Oh, shit, yeah.
In the Weed Whacker Bowl.
Yeah,
the Weed Whacker Bowl.
Did you hear where Saban said last year was a rebuilding year?
Yeah, I saw that.
So can you believe that?
Well, I guess if you don't win, it's a rebuilding year.
Yeah, that's the go-to backup phrase. If he had a bad season, just say it was a rebuilding year, even if no actual rebuilding was done.
Okay, so have you guys seen anything on the LIV lawsuit?
Yeah, that's been out there quite a bit.
Well, I know last week we talked about some more players signing on with LIV. What was the latest here?
Well, apparently the LIV is suing the PGA.
Right. Not all of them. There's like, I don't know, maybe 14 of them, and 11 have put up some type of a lawsuit. I don't think Mickelson's involved in that one.
But anyway, it has to do with guys that qualify for the tour, and then they're trying to ban them from playing in these other tournaments when they're over there doing the LIV thing.
Well, yeah, the PGA, you know, points tour or whatever is coming up the next couple of weeks, and they want to be able to, you know, use their points and be able to play in that.
Huh. Well, I know there's a lawsuit now, and PGA is going to have to answer it, but Supersonic Steve, the Seattle Mariners went into New York Yankees. Hey, Brooks, what the hell happened there?
Now, I told you a couple weeks ago. I said, keep an eye on them. I think they're going to be okay. I think they got a couple trades here. Got a pitcher that'll help them. I think they're going to be okay, and I think they have a legitimate chance of making the playoffs.
I do too. I don't like the fact that they came into New York and the Bronx and took 2 out of 3.
Well, you know, it happens. We've been feeding that team for the last 25 years, so it's nice every once in a while to get one back.
Yeah, no, the way the trades and the player movement has worked out, all the guys the Yankees got rid of are like showing up in town.
I love the Yankees, kind of, sort of, in a little bit of a way, but at the same time, because you know, the Mariners, you know, we've fed those guys a bunch of really good players. The one player we got from them that always did really well was Jay Buhner.
Jay Buhner, boy, that's digging for the back in the
It is, but we've given about 30 out and we got one back.
Well, all I know, and I couldn't hardly wait to talk to you about your Mariners coming into the Bronx and taking 2 out of 3.
Hey, man, that was big. That was huge.
For them, for sure. For sure.
Especially this time of year, because we needed that.
No, I know. In a perfect world, they would catch Houston.
I know.
But wait. Listen up. So Houston Astros last night had a player by the name of Yordan Olivares. Did you see this?
No, I didn't.
No.
He had 4 strikes in an at-bat.
Really?
The ump called a strike, so he stood and watched one go by, strike, and then he fouled one off where everybody raced to the third base bag, and it fell in between 3 players. And then he came back and had another called third strike, and then he grounded out to first base, and nobody noticed that he got...
I was going to say, you want the other umpires or like...
The umps didn't notice. The pitcher didn't notice. The catcher didn't notice.
What about the announcers?
The announcers didn't notice.
I was going to say, wouldn't the TV automatic stat tracking catch it or something?
Nobody caught this till the next possible? Day.
The next day? I got to look at this.
That's what's wrong with Major League Baseball right now is the umps are so piss poor.
Oh, God.
Poor You know,
it's embarrassing.
It is. It is. It's like,
what's crazy for not
this guy sat standing behind home plate with a clicker, right? Like the old clicker we've all used ever since we were little kids.
Oh yeah.
And they can't get it right.
Well, I guess the player most likely and the other teammates must have known, but of course I would have just like them just played silly. I'm like, all right, let this slide.
Oh, I didn't know anything.
Yeah, but you would think that, and this is Houston Astros, you would think the pitcher on the opposing team and the catcher or the management or anybody in the dugout would know.
Did they issue like a statement then, umpire, the next day? Or
well,
anything?
No, this came out. This all, it's a big story. I don't know. I just, I'm like the Houston Astros need another strike.
Oh my goodness, that is
shit. Got everything else in the garbage can.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like a fifth down in football, right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Okay, so here's how fast your major league career goes down the tubes. The Phillies. Okay. Phillies shortstop Didi Gregorius was released today.
Yeah, I saw he got released. I heard that.
And Didi was a Yankee shortstop, and I was mad when they sent him out. And he was a twin quick killer. Every postseason, he just brutalized the Twins. Three-run home runs, that kind of thing. But then as the playoffs went deeper, he kind of died. The other one is the Red Sox cut Jackie Bradley Jr. He's one of the guys on their World Series teams.
Yes.
That was a huge week for moves.
And that's, you know, those are things that, these are both guys that, I don't know, I was like hoping Didi would come back to New York, but if he's that bad that the Phillies released him, maybe not.
What was the trade deadline days ago?
Tuesday.
Right?
Tuesday.
Yeah. Twins got a couple of good pickups last minute.
What do they got?
It was interesting. They were playing the Tigers in the middle of their three-game series with the Tigers earlier this week, and they had a trade with the Tigers, so they got this guy pretty much walked across the clubhouses, switched clubhouses. So they got Tyler Mahle and right-handed relievers Jorge Lopez and Michael Fulmer, and a couple of them played the very next day. Fulmer and Lopez both played, and Lopez got his first save with the Twins actually just yesterday. He did, three batters and just seven pitches, and three of them were for a strikeout, so big, awesome first day for him.
I thought that was pretty cool that the guy just switched locker rooms.
Yeah, just okay, walk across the hall. I'll worry about finding a home the next day. You'll be fine.
Yeah, but I saw some guys that didn't find it so nice. Jordan Montgomery of the Yankees was like shocked when he was dealt to St. Louis.
I was kind of looking up
just
like
just despondent, and then also, who was the other guy that was like? Oh, the guy from the Red Sox, the catcher. Man,
I can look it up here.
I think is his name Velasquez.
That sounds about right.
But he was like a big part of their batting unit or whatever, and he always hurt the Yankees. And he was in an interview.
Christian Vasquez?
Yeah, Christian Vasquez. And he was in the interview when he got notified he was traded.
Oh, mid-interview.
Yeah, mid-interview. And I'm like, that's terrible. That just, you know, how you know, you're like, the game's over, and maybe you lost, and you're, you know. Oh, yeah, you got traded, and then he's got to respond. So the thing is that they try to catch these guys before they earn an interview.
Get their knee-jerk reaction, instant reaction.
To tell them that you've been dealt, because it's a business, and that's how it works. But yeah, so there was, it was like some really bad timing on some of this stuff. And
did you hear about – oh, sorry.
Go ahead. No.
I was going to mention like the big trade right before the deadline. We were kind of talking about it last week. We were wondering if he's going to get traded or not.
Soto.
Juan Soto.
Soto, yeah.
And yeah, he went to San Diego.
It was a big trade package, too. I got the
huge.
The Padres got Juan Soto and first baseman Josh Bells from the Nationals. And in return, the Nationals got from the Padres five prospects, Mackenzie Gore, Robert Hassel III, C.J. Abrams, James Wood, and Jarlin Susana, and also the Nationals are getting a veteran first baseman designated hitter, Luke Voit. So, yeah, six players.
Well, Luke Voit was a Yankee, and they hated seeing him go.
Well, they kind of got devastated by Washington is not looking real good after that trade.
No, no. They sent everything. Really, Soto, I don't know. You know, so now everybody's looking for Soto and Tatis and Machado to be this unstoppable offense, but I don't know what San Diego's pitching looks like, but if you don't have pitching.
Well, they were in the World Series last year, though, right, with Atlanta?
Is that who it was, San Diego and Atlanta?
Atlanta won.
Well, Atlanta's on the rise. They got a 5-game series with the Mets right now. And they just signed one of their top guys. Austin Riley signed a 10-year, $212 million contract extension with Atlanta.
Well, it sounds like the Twins came out good with their reliever and a good starter.
And closer with Lopez, hopefully, because, yeah, like we mentioned before, their bullpen has been
devastated. I was just hoping Sano would have been on one of those trades.
Poor Sano, did you hear?
He just went back on the IR.
60-day IR. He's only back for two games.
You hear that, Steve?
Yes, I did.
Miguel Sano. Have you seen anything of this guy's career? He can hit the ball 500 feet, but he cannot stay on the field.
Yeah. He played like the first 2 or 3 weeks and then was injured for like the last, 3 months or so, and then came back after doing a rehab stint in the minors.
Yep. He's really good at striking out, too.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Home runner strikeout.
He's a Pedro Serrano of the Twins. A little nice major league reference
Pedro
there.
Pedro Serrano.
Remember that? That was his whole thing. Boy. But, had an MRI that showed progressive cartilage injury. That was there before he had knee surgery.
Paul's got something he wants to put in here.
Yeah, I asked some friends of mine the other day, because I just don't understand the physics of it. So you have a heavier set hitter, and for some reason they can drive the ball out of the field. I mean, even if you look at softball, whatever, and you got a string bean guy, and he can't hit it as hard as like a guy that's, you know,
More body mass.
But the ball is going at a velocity. You're swinging the bat at a velocity. And, you know, it's aren't. So why is it that heavier set guys can hit the ball farther than a skinny guy?
I know there's been some exceptions over the year, but usually that is the case. I want to say, you know,
Babe Ruth.
Yeah, Babe Ruth. Yeah.
Babe Ruth.
But Barry Bonds in his later years.
But if you think about it, though, I mean, the ball is going at a certain velocity. You're swinging the bat at a certain velocity. I mean, if your arms are the same. So
it has to do with strength, I would have to imagine, too.
Or steroids.
But it wouldn't even be strength, because heavier set guys can hit the ball farther than skinny guys. And I just don't understand the physics of it. So if anybody can explain it to me, I'd be more than...
It's probably the same thing you have to figure out about golf shots, too.
Yeah, but
some of those guys can really hit a long ball that are skinny like Tiger.
Well,
remember what Tiger used to be like.
Yeah, and your examples would be like Eric Davis when he was at Cincinnati Reds. He was just this skinny, skinny guy that could just blast the ball.
Or
Buxton's
Ken
one
Griffey.
Of those. Buxton's one of those guys that can... Turn and just crush the ball. He's got no weight to him. I don't think he weighs 200 pounds.
No, yeah. And, you know, Griffey had so many good years, too. He was a home run slugger and one of the few people that kind of came out clean from the whole steroid era where, you know, he's a pretty thin guy where he was...
Oh, no, he was on Androstat or whatever it is.
I think you need to do a book report on that.
Steve, you got any ball players you can remember like that? Those thin dudes that could just rip the ball like that?
There's a kid that played for the Mariners and just got traded. And I want to say might have ended up with the Mets or somewhere back there. Vogelberg.
Vogelberg, yeah. He's one of the top dudes for the Mets, I think.
Yeah, no, he's a big left-handed kid, heavy set guy. When he gets a hold of it.
He's heavy set.
What?
You just said he's heavy set.
Well,
he is heavy.
Yeah, I'm talking about why can't skinny guys hit like fat guys?
Well, they can, but I was going to refer back to what you said earlier. I think Ken Griffey, when he came up,
was a thin dude.
He was slender dude, not a toothpick, but you know, probably in $190, $195 Okay, or so, thereabout, maybe a little bit. So but when he connected, he could hit it as far as anybody.
When he hit those eight home runs in a row, eight games in a row, you remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was a little slender kid then.
But do you think that he would have been able to hit it as far as somebody that was fat?
Well, I don't know. It is interesting that they do seem to, you know, they're telling you a lot of times you can watch and see what the velocity of the pitch is. But then the next thing they'll say is, yeah, and it came off the bat at X amount.
Now they're getting more in-depth stat tracking for home run distances and so forth over the years and decades.
They can throw the ball probably 99, yet the guy will hit the ball at 107 coming off the...
The only thing that I can think of is that the contact of the ball to the bat, when you have a heavier set guy, that the heavy guy somehow has more of a impact on it than a skinny guy.
Well, more torque.
Yeah, I guess. But why? But it's in the arms and the shoulders. Why does that have anything to do with the belly? Well, I just don't get it. Moving on.
Gary Sheffield.
He could hit.
Yeah, and he was a guy with bat speed.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
You know, he just let it loose every time he brought that bat around. And he was like trying to put the ball over the fence every time he swung. Reggie Jackson. You remember how he corkscrewed himself into the ground? But, boy, when he contacted, it was gone.
From Oakland, the two boys.
Bash Bros. Well,
McGuire and Canseco.
Yeah, those guys, when they swung, and oh, man. I mean, they corkscrewed themselves into the ground.
Well, Canseco will always be remembered for that ball going off his head.
Yes. Oh, I'll give a shout out to Keith in the chat giving us an update on the Hall of Fame game. Raiders and Jags are on. Raiders are up 3-0, kicking off the NFL preseason.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all right, Supersonic Steve. I know you got to try to get something to eat tonight and say hi to Char.
We will, and my ice is good, so it's all good. You guys have a good evening.
We'll be looking for you next week.
Yeah, I'll be there. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, buddy.
Appreciate you calling in, bud.
He's gone.
Well, he's an old school guy. He's not as old as Bill, but he's older than me, so he's in between.
Covering all the ranges. The NFL preseason officially underway. I'm looking forward. I always love watching the Hall of Fame speeches, always, each year. I always make sure NFL is really good about putting those up on YouTube. And, you were saying before the show.
It should be on ESPN, I would think, too.
I'm horrible at watching them live. I got the worst sleep work schedule ever, so I always watch them on the replay. But, watching
Canton, Ohio.
I've been to the actual Football Hall of Fame. It's the only Hall of Fame I've been to. I'm planning on going to the United States Hockey Hall of Fame here next month, or in a couple weeks actually. So I'm looking forward to that. But have you ever guys? I've been. Yeah, the Canton Hall Pro Football Hall of Fame is awesome. I love going there. Walked on the football field out there. Super cool. Yeah, that is a very cool place. Do you guys got like a Hall of Fame speech over the years that kind of really stood out to you? I know I love watching. I've been trying to watch them all every year for like the last like decade or so. Emmitt Smith is one of the ones that comes to mind off the top of my head. I thought he gave a tremendous induction speech. Or do you guys watch the Hall of Fame speeches at all much?
I try to.
Some of them can go on for a bit, but I remember Madden gave a pretty good one, and I think Dan Marino also. Yeah, those three come to mind right away. But are you guys going to be watching any of the speeches at all, or is that
going to be Saturday? Is that when it is? Or
I don't know.
I believe so. I'll probably catch them on YouTube on replay there. But I guess also I'll give a quick Twins update, just kind of coming off baseball. They're currently playing the Blue Jays right now.
In Minneapolis.
And, yep, Minneapolis, and the score right now, bottom of the fourth, still 0-0. And Twins right now, still barely clinging to that AL Central lead, just a one-game lead over the Guardians.
Yeah, barely.
55 and 49, pending the result will be updated after this game. But yeah, it was kind of like another flip-flop week for them. They started the week bad, three-game series against the Tigers. They lost it 1-2. And then they had a three-game series against the,
Padres.
Padres, which they won.
2-1.
2-1. So, and they keep flip-flopping. And I guess, yeah, major highlight from the games this week, I put Monday night, they had a clutch win finally, a 10th inning win against the Tigers. Urshela got a two-run homer.
Yeah, I went to bed, and I didn't see the end of that, but somebody hit a two-run dinger.
Yeah, Gio Urshela, yeah. Yeah, big ups to him. That was
and the other team had scored. It was 2-2 going into the 10th. The other team scored, and then the Twins came back.
Yeah, that was really good to see, yeah, so...
I think they tied it up 3-3 and then won 5-3.
Yeah. I know we've been kind of ragging on them a lot for their extra innings not being, or the just clutch late game series hasn't been the best. But, yeah.
Well, I don't have a whole lot of stuff to throw at you. My last note is about Commanders, Carson Wentz.
I've been reading some headlines and it doesn't sound like it's going really well there. Is that kind of what you're going to talk about?
Well, he was getting booed in practice.
Oh, I didn't.
He threw three interceptions in practice.
Oh no!
During training camp, and he was getting booed by the handful of people that were there.
That's not a good sign.
I don't know what.
Yeah, that is because he's had battling some injuries the last couple of years and getting shuffled around from team to team.
He's on his third team in 3 years.
Yeah. Because he only really had, like, what, a really good season and a half for the Eagles? Maybe seasons?
Did they win the Super Bowl?
But yeah, it was like...
Yeah, but Nick Foles, he was already injured, but he led... He pretty much
got him there.
He got him to that point, and then Nick Foles finished it off.
Right.
Did he get injured? Was it early in the playoffs or late in the season when Wentz got injured for the Eagles?
Is that the dive into the end zone ACL?
Right.
Yeah, so... Yeah, that was a real... Yeah. I guess we'll give a shout-out to Steve Smalls and the chap. He brought up that Oshie had his number retired in War Road.
Oh, yeah, that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. I saw and Kerry Eads was up there, and they went out golfing. And also Thomas Vanek, Gopher guy, was out there driving the cart, I guess, for Kerry Eads.
Hmm.
Kerry Eads posted a picture of him and Vanek saying it's Gophers and Sue can actually get along. I don't know.
Maybe I didn't see that one.
Maybe not Badgers, but anyway, Gophers and UID. What do you got over there?
Well, I got a couple more things here for you, but maybe we should up our next ad here before we get on.
You want to do it?
Yeah, sure. We're going to give a shout out to, it's coming up real soon, the Mayor's Back the Badge Ride. So it's the Mayor's Back the Badge Ride, second year, August 24th from 4:30 p.m. to 9. And Mayor Brandon Bochensky, he was actually here in the studio talking about it here a couple days ago. Look it up on the Monday interview on GFBS to get all the details, but... he's excited to invite UTV, ATV, motorcyclists, and even golf cart enthusiasts together to enjoy a family-friendly recreation within the Grand Forks city limits while supporting the Grand Forks Police Department, the Grand Forks Sheriff's Department, and the University Police Department. So, yeah, just a great cause. Had a really good turnout last year. And as part of the festivities this year, they're excited to announce the Zero Gravity Outreach, a motorbike and quad aerial display. So here's your chance to show off your support for these brave men and women who dedicate themselves each day to protecting our community. The schedule of events is coming soon, and you can find out all the details and go register at mayorsbackthebadgeride.com. So yeah, www.mayorsbackthebadgeride.com. And I don't think it was that expensive to register, too. So yeah, they had a really good turnout, and I think GFBS did some coverage for it last year, too. So we did go into the GFBS archives. They had some interviews from it and all that, too. So, yeah.
Is Paul going to be riding his bike in it, or?
Paul going to be riding the Harley for it?
Maybe.
Maybe. There we go. And that's going to be at the Alaris Center. So, yeah, definitely make sure to be there. Check it out. Should be a very fun time. Give Brandon Bochensky some love.
But. Well, and so just so you guys don't miss out, in case... any of your relatives have an old house or an old barn or somewhere where some old relative kept baseball cards, the Honus Wagner card
Oh yes.
sold
Got one of those big sellers. Yeah, the original, what was that, 1909, 1908, right around there?
The old, the just set a new record at $7.25 million for the Honus Wagner tobacco card.
What was it graded? Pretty high? Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure what it was graded, but I will take a quick look. But
yeah. But yeah, I got a few things here.
T206, and I don't know that it needs to be...
I guess for that card, so...
Yeah, if you can find one of those...
Just any condition can get a lot for it, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if it's battered and tarred.
Well, I've been looking for that one my whole life.
No, I don't think you're going to find it.
That's your diamond in the rough.
Well, you never, you know...
Never know.
We found the comic books in the...
Elbow Lake.
Yeah, you know? Elbow Lake in the wall, so it can happen, but most of the farmsteads and stuff have been pretty scanned over, you know, over the years. People have dug through them and... But nobody really has gone through the walls and that kind of stuff. And I was a baseball card guy myself. You folks out there will never know what it was like to get a 550-piece collection of baseball cards, buying them pack by pack.
In childhood years, that was like the last big, just like kind of when baseball card collecting was more mainstream. I know it's kind of still a big thing. It has its niche still with like all the various foil cards and like pieces of baseball bats included with specialty marked packs and all that. But I remember going to card shows. There was actually just a few months ago, there was a baseball card and comic show here in the Grand Cities Mall a few months ago. And I used to love going to baseball card shows as a kid and just collecting as a kid for a few years there. Had a real fun run for it in the late 80s, early 90s. Yes. Got a few albums back home. Not too much. I really reduced my collection just some of my favorite cards. But
So you got any racing action?
Yeah, I got some racing and a couple things.
Throw it out there.
Yeah. Here's kind of like a little bit of a fluff piece before we get to the racing stuff. I just saw this earlier today. It kind of made my day. I don't know if either of you were a big fan of the Alternative Sports League. It was only around for a few years in the early to mid-2000s. Slam Ball, remember that? The Trampoline Basketball League, it was like on Spike TV. It was a, I don't know, Paul, do you remember that by chance, Slam Ball?
I recall hearing about it.
Oh, gosh. It was an alternative basketball league. It was pretty much like, it was so like just... exciting and lightning fast to keep up with. The games were super short, so that was a nice big plus to it. So like the arenas had like plexiglass like hockey, because they had trampolines around the paint area of the basketball, and players would actually wear padding and helmets, and they'd do like big acrobatic dives and leaps towards the basket, and so he could jump up. It was pretty much trampoline basketball. It was fun to watch. The games were super short, so it was not too much of an investment to keep up with. I read some interviews with players over the years, and so they announced the Mason Gordon, the founder of Slam Ball, he announced the sport is returning in 2023 and went on to say in a quote, there have been all kinds of people clamoring for Slam Ball to come back. And it was viewed over 200 million times the last 12 months in just social media over the years, so he's officially announcing it's coming back next year. And just kind of like the nice big gist for it is they're just 20-minute games. You fit it in within a half hour, and people have been gravitating towards the action, mashup between basketball, football, hockey, a little bit of gymnastics, a little bit of video games.
Yeah, I do remember it, because there was like a rapper or somebody that was playing in it, and yeah, it was like an MTV thing, I think, for a while.
Yeah, they had celebrity owners. It was on Spike
TV. Was it basketball?
Yeah, basketball.
So like Master P?
Yeah, I think he was one of them.
I forget who. Yeah, I can't remember. I know there were like some celebrity owners too, like Arena Football. They had like celebrity owners.
Yeah.
But it was, and the games were super short, so it was just nice to fun to have on in the background. See players do all kinds of crazy.
And they had like trampolines and stuff.
Yep, trampolines to kind of really launch himself, to have like those NBA Jam style like skyhook dunks.
It wasn't Coolio, but it was like somebody like that was one of the guys that was in there. Yeah, I remember it. But
it was
kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. But as an alternative sports league, half hour game, it was just a fun, just nice little distraction from the main NBA and stuff. But.
So I do have a couple real sports stuff.
Anthony, real sports stuff.
Anthony Barr signed with the Dallas Cowboys.
I saw that.
For up to $3 million for a 1-year deal. There was still some
thought. The Vikings didn't want him, huh?
Well, there was still some thought that the Vikings might bring him back, but I don't know. Maybe he's a little too vocal. I don't know. Something like that. New ownership and all. And then the other one was the Steelers Pro Bowl wide receiver, Deontay Johnson, agreed to a new deal $36.71 million with $27 million of it guaranteed. But that's basically all the sports stuff I got. And I know Dale's got some racing stuff over here.
Yeah, got some racing stuff. A quick update on the Twins game. Top of the fifth, Twins went up 1-0. And in the Hall of Fame game, actually, my app isn't updating the score of the Hall of Fame game. So, Keith, if you have another update for us, I am all ears. But and we'll be looking forward to having you on next week. So, yeah, just a quick little racing update. And I got one other thing other than the racing update here, too. But I was at the River City Speedway last weekend. That was a lot of fun there.
I wasn't there last weekend.
Oh, yeah. A lot of fun with the lightning sprints there. They were highlighting the show. Yeah, pretty much, the miniature.
That's the smaller...
Smaller sprint cars, yeah, but they're still pretty loud. Still pack a pretty mean punch.
Are those kids then too, or
no? It's like all ages, but they also had the street stocks were there, and those were always fun to watch too. So, yeah, it was really really good race action. Always fun at the River City Speedways, and I believe they got A modifieds this weekend, but at the River City Speedway, but yeah. So
as an expert in racing. What's the difference between a late model and what's the other one they call it? Modified?
Well, I know the late model. I wouldn't say I'm an expert. I'm just kind of re-immersing myself in the local racing scene this last year. So I'm still...
Show from today.
Yeah. Dirty Thursdays. Yeah, definitely check out Dirty Thursdays earlier today. They had on... Justin
Strand.
Dustin, right?
Yeah, or Dustin Strand.
He's an A-modified driver, so...
The modifieds and the late models look a lot alike, right?
Yeah, I know the late models are a little bit more horsepower.
He's also a late model driver.
And late model driver. Yeah, he drives multiple classes.
He talked about differences between the two.
Okay, yeah, so there you go. Go on GFBS on our podcast, podcast feed or our video feed, Facebook feed, social media feeds. We'll have the interview with him for Dustin Strand on Dirty Thursdays.
I just got to talk to John, I guess. He's the expert.
Well, John, he's the announcer. So John is the expert. Yes. But I do know the late models do pack a little bit more of a punch. I've been picking John's brain a little bit here earlier this year, just trying to go into the races a little more this year. Usually I'd only go to the races in town like... once or twice a year, but now I've been trying to go a couple times a month. So, yeah.
So.
Paul's got an update.
Yeah, so Dustin Strand was on the show today, and he actually races late model, and he builds cars. So I think it was an A mod that he races and a late model, and he talked about the differences between the two. And from what I gathered is that, the late model, there's more rubber on the road, so it grips a little bit more. But, you'll just have to watch the show to really hear, the experts talk about it. Because I'm not a race guy, but, it was our show
so
today.
So, one probably has more horsepower than the other?
It sounds like, I think the late models have a little bit more horsepower. Maybe not, but I know that he's talking about, the tires are bigger on a late model. And I think the cars themselves are a little bit bigger. So, when they're... He was talking about...
And they go around the curve and stuff?
Yeah, he was talking about grip and all this stuff, because he said it's a hard transition to... Because I think he races both. And so, when he jumps into one as opposed to the other, it's kind of a hard transition to figure out how they operate, as far as, hitting those banks and everything. But, it's interesting. I'm not a huge race guy, but... If you watch our show that we had at 11 today with Dustin Strand, he breaks it all down.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead and watch. Yeah, Dirty Thursday he was on. Check it out. But other racing stuff there, F1, Max Verstappen won again. It was the same 1-2-3 as a week before. Lewis Hamilton second and George Russell third. And next race is in Belgium, and hopefully it's better. Did you hear what happened at the crazy Belgian Grand Prix last year? It was kind of unprecedented in F1. It was a two-lap race, and the whole race was done by safety car because of the crazy weather conditions. Kind of unparalleled if you check it out on highlights. It was the craziest.
So was there real long laps then? Or?
No, well, there was very bad weather going on. They're kind of postponing the race to try and get a race in, and... due to the F1 rules at the time, they had to change the rules after it. Is if they postpone the race so much, they have to make sure to get so much of a race in. The bare minimum of a race they need to get in for the race to count for the records is two laps. And because of the weather was so borderline dangerous, they did the two laps by safety car. So no one actually raced, and the positions were all done by the qualifying positions. So, and yeah, it was a crazy race. Yeah, Spa.
So what does safety mean? They didn't have...
Well, the safety is pretty much a version of a caution. So they have a safety car lead the pack there under a caution. And like no one actually raced, but they just had the safety car count the two laps. So yeah, it was bonkers. It was the most ridiculous race for the F1 season last year. Yeah, super short, but yeah, that'll be going on this Sunday at 8 a.m. on ESPN. But and then for the NASCAR Cup race is probably the most interesting race of last weekend of the four I've been keeping up with. So it was on the Indianapolis road course. Tyler Reddick won the race, but just seeing the NASCAR stock cars race on road courses with chicanes and all that just seems so unnatural, but it's just so fun to watch. There's a lot of those chicanes and the wide turns, cars going five wide, even six wide at some point, and just spin outs nonstop. I'm not a big fan of the stage racing they've done in NASCAR the last several years, but whenever they have a restart for these road courses, it's always fascinating. Just see them go five wide, six wide for these chicanes and all that. It just doesn't seem right, but it's just fun to watch the chaos that ensues. So that was your main NASCAR and F1 update. Other than that, give a quick shout out for wrestling with SummerSlam last weekend, kind of like WWE's second biggest show of the year. And the main highlight from that was the Last Man Standing match main event, Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. You know, Brock Lesnar, he's kind of a local in the area, the South Dakota, Minnesota, North Dakota area, spent some time in, we've talked about on the show. But for WWE lately, they've been really hyping up how he's a big farm boy. And he came out to the ring in a tractor. And the tractor actually got involved in the match. So the Last Man Standing match is pretty much each wrestler kind of like boxing, trying to knock each other down to see if they can get up before a 10 count. And to get Roman Reigns really knocked out, Brock Lesnar... got the tractor, hoisted the tractor up with what's it called? The bulldozer part of the tractor, the big shovel part at the end. I forget the proper term, but he used it to hoist up the ring and knock Roman Reigns out of the ring, get him to come out. It was a very nice spectacle, made for an interesting match. But yeah, Roman Reigns eventually won it. That'll be my one highlight from WWE. And
I think it's called the dozer.
Dozer, okay, yes, just a straight up dozer. Is that it? Yeah. Paul says a dozer. I will trust him. But and then the other main thing, they had another big pay-per-view the next night where it was hyped up as Ric Flair's last match.
I saw something on that.
Yeah, so they're hyping it up. Ric Flair having a big comeback match. A tag.
And he got very bloody.
Yes, it was a big tag team match against. It was him teaming up with his son-in-law Andrade El Idolo. Against
well, his daughter was in there too, wasn't she, or something?
She got involved in the match because the wrestlers are messing with Ric Flair's family sitting at ringside. They're kind of shoving him around, his daughter and all that, and his daughter Megan, and they're against Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett, and they put on a nice long match. It was a really good spectacle. A lot of big names, names of the past at ringside. Bret Hart, Undertaker. Yeah, a lot of big names at ringside. Diamond Dallas Page. And they kind of were going for that old school, I don't know. I think you guys said you grew up with wrestling in the 80s
well,
or
Bret,
so.
Well, Bret the Hitman Hart.
Yeah, Bret Hart was a classic
legend. I saw
him
in person. Him and the Anvil Neihard were tag team partners.
Oh, yeah, Hart Foundation. Classic tag team. Yeah, they actually went to the WWE's Hall of Fame the other year. But, yeah, they it was a fun match because they kind of were going for the recapture of that Jim Crockett promotions feel of the 80s with that classic backdrop, but they kind of still had some HD Trons and all that there too. And pretty much a lot of it was Jarrett and Flair were kind of hitting their signature moves. They kind of had a competition to see who could do the Flair strut better and do the better big figure four leg lock.
Whoa!
Ric Flair, 73 years old. He was exhausted by the end of the match, even though he was taking turns getting the tags in so Ric Flair could rest and all that. But Ric Flair looked like he was ready just to be done at the end of the match. He locked in the figure four on Jeff Jarrett, got a pin on him on it. And like I say, yeah, Ric Flair was just battered and bloodied up by the end of the match. He gave a nice victory speech at the end. He said he was going to go celebrate and drink with Kid Rock all night. So Kid Rock was in the crowd too. So yeah, if you can track it down online or on the replay on Fight TV,
well,
yeah.
Ric Flair was in Grand Forks a decade ago or more, and he was trying to pick Hana up.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
At the El Rocco Bar.
Oh, man.
Well, she was not having any of his old ass.
Nature Boy would be styling and profiling, as he would like to say.
Woo! He did that. He was like, do you know who I am? Do you know who I am?
Oh, yeah. Keith has an update. Raiders are up 6-0. So,
2 field goals.
Yeah.
Oh, exciting.
Boy. Yes.
Exciting.
So, yeah, that is all I have.
Exciting Thursday night.
I believe we have one more final shout-out to give here.
Well, we better do this ad. Here we go. Circle of Friends, Animal Shelter, Grand Forks. If you're thinking about a new pet to complete your family, please contact the Circle of Friends, Animal Shelter, Grand Forks. Your new adopted family member will be spayed or neutered, chipped, and up to date with shots, and will be ready to come to its new home. Circle of Friends could also use dog and cat food, cat litter, towels, washcloths, small fleece blankets, and more. If you would like to help pets in need, please contact them at cofpets.com. cofpets.com. Circle of Friends is also hiring. Make your family complete by adopting Circle of Friends Animal Shelter in Grand Forks. Call 701-775-3732, and they're located out on way north Washington.
Way, way north.
Yeah, I've been out there. I know
where they're at. Fufang.
Fufang, don't start that, Bill. We're talking national issue there.
Okay.
Anything else, Bill? You got any sports?
I don't have
anything you want to throw at us? UND football coming up.
Well, they've started.
Yeah, they're in camp now, and it looks like getting ready to go. School season's kicking off. When is that Lincoln game?
Lincoln is the 3rd of September.
3rd of September, and that's game one, right?
You guys for UND, not for...
Yeah, UND's first game is September 3rd.
And you guys are going to be there, right?
Well, I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. So
Dale, Sandy will trust you.
Going with the Deutsch boys? Yeah. I don't think so.
I think so.
I don't know. She's skeptical.
I went through everything I had. Yeah.
That's all I got,
that's
guys.
All we got.
You might as well roll the music.
We'll see everyone next week. Keith Cummings will be in the house.
Keith Cummings in the house.